This is Hybrid Teaching, Pedagogy, People, Politics, a serialized audiobook addressing the intersections of pedagogy and power in our connected and challenging education environment. It's the audio version of the open access collection of the same name, published in February 2021. The book features 27 chapters of provocative text addressing the intersections of critical pedagogy and digital technology in our present political moment. I'm your host, Chris Friend, from Kane University. I introduce your authors and read the occasional chapter. This podcast provides one more avenue for accessing the material from the book, which is also available as an ebook, a print-on-demand paperback, a series of articles published on the open web, and screen and print-ready PDFs available for free on Hybrid Pedagogy. This is Chapter 6 of Part 3, Politics, and you'll hear Education as Bulwark of Uselessness, originally published on the 19th of July, 2016, on Hybrid Pedagogy. It is read here by its author, Luca Marini.
In 2014, halfway through the twisting path that was my doctoral course, I found myself in Finland, at the Critical Evaluation of Game Studies seminar, where, above all the big names in the field of game studies who spoke there, among which were Espen Arset, Jesper Juhl, and Franz Meyer, one thing was indelibly imprinted in my memory. Canadian sociologist Bart Simon's characterization of game studies as a true, undeniable bulwark of uselessness, a field of thought that can work in resistance to all appeals to productivity and efficiency. Because really, what can be more frivolous in productive common sense than spending a couple days discussing the philosophy of playing games? As someone with a preference to play supportive and protective roles in online games, or to follow gaming jargon, a tank, always relishing the role of defending my teammates in our small unnecessary virtual struggles, I found that image really sticking strongly. As I continued climbing towards the completion of my PhD in education and communication, largely by playing and making games within communities of amateur game designers, I came to think that this powerful image, that of the bulwark of uselessness, could be a conceptualization relevant to all cultural endeavors in their conflicting relationship with narrowly utilitarian economic forces. I reflected on how, in the current historical cultural moment, this bulwark finds itself attacked in its last public expressions, that is, the spaces of institutionalized education in general and university in particular, and that the fall of this bulwark, its full exclusion from public spaces, cultures, and discourses, would be nothing short of catastrophic. As a living example of these utilitaristic attacks, having soon after my graduation obtained a research position at an institution aimed at promoting change in higher education, Coventry University's Disruptive Media Learning Lab, I found myself involved in a variety of projects that most often, with different degrees of subtlety, involved a particular compliance-oriented mode of learning, gamification. At the time, it meant for me seeing games and play used as tools focused on pushing people to address some specific instrumental purpose. Luckily, just as often, noble ones, such as promoting more environmentally sustainable practices. Just as all too often, education itself seems close to becoming merely a simple tool for economic ends. That was an uncomfortable position, and one that I struggled to critically come to terms with as an engaged pedagogist and game scholar. While I participated in a still ongoing push towards a more co-creative approach to playfulness and games, my strong concerns with utilitarianism were one of the factors that contributed to my move to a different department, Coventry's Institute for Global Learning, where I endeavored to focus more specifically on issues of international intercultural education. Though I still concern myself with different types of gaming that the metrification of education has led to. Because really, what is uselessness? Being part of the above-mentioned bulwark of uselessness is to push every day against mainstays of 21st century discourse, such as the masterful victim-blaming that is the modern concept of employability, which pushed to expunge imaginative and critical cultural work from the public side in favor of an exclusive focus on what is considered immediately useful, management and productivity. Our education seems not to be about education anymore, inclusive of cultural, political, epistemological and ethical considerations, but more and more about mere technical, specialized training, going as far as to quantify one's patterning at humans' relationships at soft skills, which are usually conveniently aimed at furthering a corporate agenda. How come employers give credit to supposed skills like adaptability and conflict resolution and not to the likes of political awareness, resistance to authority, or union organizing? I surely learned a lot about the latter in the last few years. I even heard and read a fellow academic saying, in complete good faith, that this is what our students want, and we are therefore being democratic in providing them with theory-devoid curricula. This way, they can focus on training for concrete practical stuff that makes up the real world, and therefore, ultimately, get a better job. And it's not like those teachers who say so necessarily like educational institutions' current market orientation. They just think it is a fact of reality, something that just is. Remembering how Alfred Korzybski and Robert Anton Wilson warned us against the word is, it constantly opposed me how close market and reality end up being in this field of discourse, which also conveniently obscures how, however, structural inequality doesn't care about employability skills. Just have a look at graduate employment data involving gender and ethnicity wherever you live. So, higher education is useless. This is a point of view we keep hearing more and more in the media. It started with the widespread irony on philosophy majors' jobs perspectives, and is now expanding to everything aesthetics or theory related. In later years, this argument possibly reached its peak in 2018 with a book that I will not cite by Brian Kaplan, in which he, after correctly diagnosing how education falls short of the promise of somehow solving inequality, argues that we might as well stop investing in it. The main point of this essay is, however, that we should not reject this pervasive rhetoric in its various versions. And this is because we can't reclaim utility for our endeavors without implicitly submitting to the tyranny of productivity. We can't claim legitimation using the same criteria of our opponents, or, to quote Audre Lorde, we can't use the master's tools to dismantle the master's house. We need instead to embrace this accusation to its very end, following the advice of anthropologist and systems thinker Gregory Bateson on confronting paradoxical situations. Well, there is no way out, the only way is through. Please note that there is no irony in my claim to higher education's uselessness, if not the specific choice of word. I could have gone for less provocative alternatives such as anti-utilitarianism or unproductiveness. I am being completely straight in claiming that the role and glory of education is that it can be useless, not being bound by criteria of production and predetermined purpose. Of uselessness and dinosaurs. Many philosophers and thinkers have proposed poignant critiques of the discourse of utilitarianism, from Marx to John Paul II, to cover the political spectrum. But still, these are just theories not grounded in, air quotes, reality or facts. Let us then take a shot at this going-through approach, and for a while, lean not on philosophy or pedagogy, but on so-called hard sciences, those same useful, productive STEM subjects that are being rhetorically used to push humanities and criticism outside of the academia. There is this concept in evolutive biology, exaptation, as discussed by Gould and Verba, which describes shifts of function in evolved traits. So to make a macroscopic example, feathers, probably, initially evolved in dinosaurs for thermoregulatory purposes. A warm coat, which let these atypical reptiles be more efficient and expand the spaces of their living to northern and southern latitudes. A very useful adaptation, there is no doubt in that. Some dinosaurs, however, were not content with just being warmed by their feathers and started playing with them. They even showed them off to potential partners, and for these unwholesome and useless practices, were probably censored as lackers, time wasters, societal burdens by their elders and bureaucrats. Please remember, this essay is a playful experiment. Well, then one day, maybe by accident, maybe while playfully chasing each other, maybe falling from a tree they were singing some serenade dawn, one of them realized that this slick coat had interesting, unexplored, and unforeseen aerodynamic properties. In a few generations, a whole new dimension of being suddenly opened up, and one unforeseeable catastrophe struck in the form of an ecosystem-changing asteroid. The grandchildren of those shameful slackers were the only ones to survive, in the form of modern birds. Of course, this is a gross simplification of evolutionary dynamics and of dinosaur social structures, for narrative's sake. Still, to quote Professor Ian Malcolm from Jurassic Park, life finds a way. And my main argument here is that this happens way less painfully and dangerously when it is being allowed to play free. What is now useless can open up whole new worlds tomorrow, and even if it never does, it is beautiful in that it has the markings of the play of possibility that is life and mind. It should not need to be justified against productivity or learning outcomes checklists. All work and no play. This is the purpose of education for me, to allow the mind to play free of purpose itself. Again, echoing Bateson, I use the word mind in its largest definition, inclusive of social and living systems. Neoliberal thought, by contrast, pushes us into an eternal, immutable present, a perversion of the very concept of sustainability, as in being able to indefinitely perpetuate the same market dynamics, a patent impossibility given their extractive nature. For this titanic task to be accomplished, there is a need to lock out the production of alternative possible worlds, especially those that are deemed wasteful and unproductive, so that any kind of entertainment which is not closely related with consumption, or even if it is not consumption of things bought, not freely gifted, is then labeled as escapism, which, as C.S. Lewis famously quipped, is a preoccupation of jailers. Following this train of thought, one prominent example of these assaults on uselessness pertains to the close relationship between play, games, and education. As of today, the large majority of games and playful practices are still preponderantly expelled by the places of learning. And well, until very recent times, most often reviled and used as scapegoats by the media. However, at the very same time, learning institutions, influenced by technocratic and techno-deterministic stakeholders, spend millions of dollars in serious games and gamification. These are ludic or pseudo-ludic practices, characterized first and foremost by their telic character, their purposiveness. The idea that games are fun, but only really worth our time if they can also do some useful work. Even when many of these games or gameful practices promote healthy or sustainable practices, on a metacommunicative level, they convey another hidden curriculum, that of surveillance, efficiency, skill, information delivery, and above all, compliance. The reduction of behavior to the useful and foreseeable. How can we instead meta-communicate liberation and possibility. Again, drawing on game cultures, a good inspiration for how we can do this is the rising global movement, exemplified by diverse like of Paolo Pedercini, Rosa Carbo-Mascarell, Gonzalo Frasca, Zoe Quinn, Anna Anthropy, among many others, that promotes freely creating and sharing games from extremely limited resources. Following their example, we can liberate education by never renouncing the uselessness and playfulness that should characterize true learning, whatever the form that play assumes, be it on a stage, on a musical instrument with feathers, or with an amateur purposeless digital game we ourselves designed, developed, and shared. Anything goes, as long as it eludes the hegemonic criteria of market and productivity, and preserves the voluntary, joyful character of play. But what are the risks if we do not nurture, sustain, and promote a cultural stance that allows for what Roger Calois calls pure waste? What could happen if we let this bulwark of uselessness, that is education, and higher education in particular, fall? The tyranny of necessity. Through our current digital ecologies, we can play with people we would otherwise never meet. Even better, we can create spaces for people we have never met to be playful in, and to learn together. We can go beyond the tyranny of proximity and provincialism, beyond the economic tyranny of utility, even the ontological tyranny of necessity. The key of my argument, however, is that the fall of this bulwark under the blows of efficiency and utility would indeed constitute the ultimate ecological catastrophe. Would the spaces where novel ideal can emerge unbound by efficiency or productivity be eliminated? The consequences would be no less than the simultaneous destruction of all non-actual possible worlds, collapsed in the monolithic eternal present of the capitalist end of history, famously discussed by Francis Fukuyama after the fall of the Berlin Wall. That is, until a further catastrophic eco-social collapse necessarily happens, due to the utmost rigidity of such system, and we go the way of the known flying dinosaurs. Please note that I'm not abstractly worried about the planet. In the immortal words of George Carlin, the planet is fine, the people are fucked. In this context, the most ethical purpose of education can therefore be only and exactly to critique purposiveness itself. A critique which, in its praxis, comes in at least two flavors. First, to create safe spaces for the emergence of practices and systems which purposes are not known yet and might never find one. And second, to strip existing practices of their current purpose, letting new ones unbound by current utilitaristic imperatives emerge. I want therefore to conclude echoing Henri Giroux and his remarks against efficiency, seriousness, and technical determinism. My appeal is to the citizens of an insidiously colonized land, spaces no more completely public, but more and more subjected to market forces and imperatives. My appeal is to get involved whenever there is the possibility of critical education through playful subversion, something that, indeed, even our current colonized learning institution still allows and provide space for, if often unknowingly and implicitly. See, for a paradigmatic example, the massive cheating and playful boycott practices which characterized Italy's Invalsi standardized school evaluation tests as a creative resistance to measurement. Subvert mere institutionalized training into engaged, playful education because, contrary to the famous saying by Margaret Thatcher, there are indeed infinite alternatives. As teachers, educators, and pedagogists, our entire job consists in cultivating these alternatives, these possible worlds, and this is something we can keep doing only by upholding the bulwark of uselessness, legitimating suspensions of productivity both your own and others, as useless spaces are actually the most evolutive ones, so that can generate alternatives and resist the instrumental purposes of our so-called common sense reality.
That was Education as Bulwark of Uselessness, originally published on the 19th of July, 2016, on Hybrid Pedagogy. It was written by Luca Marini. Luca is a research fellow at Coventry University's Center for Global Learning. He studies critical pedagogy, global perspectives on education, decolonization, systems thinking, ecology, playfulness, education technology, and co-creation. It all makes sense as a whole, he swears. Well, that's it for this episode. Next time, you'll hear The Political Power of Play by Adeline Coe. This serialized audiobook version of Hybrid Teaching, Pedagogy, People, Politics is available wherever you find podcasts. I'm Chris Friend, collection editor, podcast producer, and host. I tweet at Chris_Friend and teach at Kane University in Union, New Jersey. The theme music for this project is Where Was I? From Lee Rosevere. That song, as well as the text and audio of Hybrid Teaching, are all licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, which means they can be reused with author acknowledgement. Licenses like these make multimedia works like this simpler to create, and I'm especially grateful to each of the authors for allowing their material to be reused in this format. And I'm also grateful to you. Thanks for listening.